good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Sharad and I are in Sarawak today, and we're joining you from Riverside Majestic Hotel in Kuching. We're joined by our guest today, Datuk Sri Fung Ju Chun, who is better known as JC Fung. He served as the State Attorney General in Sarawak for over 15 years, from 1992 till 2007. He has since been retained by the Sarawak government in an advisory capacity, serving now as Sarawak Legal Counsel. JC, welcome to the show. It's good of you to join us today.
Thank you.
Now, you've been at the very heart of power and governance in Sarawak. So we kind of want to talk to you a little bit about where you see the territory heading. But before we get into, say, some of the legal and constitutional challenges that Sarawak may be facing today, maybe we can first understand where your view of the territory's evolving aspirations?
The aspiration of Sarawakians is to see that Sarawak remains as a peaceful, harmonious state. We are very unique in this respect. We show the world how many ethnic races with diverse culture, racial origin, or religious orientation can live together. You know, there has been no misunderstanding of any gravity between the various races in the state. And many of my friends, even from Peninsula, regard the state as a model for racial peace and harmony. So we want to maintain this. And I think this is very important. It contributes vastly to the stability of the politics in this state since Malaysia Day. We don't have any big political crisis, and there is continuity of government that can pursue programs of development and take the state forward over some 5 decades.
I do want to ask you, though, if too much is made of the difference between the territory of Sarawak and, say, the peninsula. I think the accusation always is that the peninsula has a very fractious politics. It is dominated by a racial sentiment and increasing chauvinism on various fronts. Do you think that, you know, in terms of the aspirations that you spoke about, that the federation as a framework for which Sarawak sits is toxic to Sarawakian politics? I mean, are we a problem, as it were, for you?
Well, I wouldn't say there is a problem for us from the nature in which politics is being played out in Peninsular Malaysia. As you know, our leaders here had successfully insulated the state and the political parties here from the politics of the peninsula. So we approach generally politics from a different angle. I think for many years, Pei Hen Sri Taib Mahmud has championed the politics of development. In other words, we are concerned, you know, not so much about differences between the various ethnic groups in Sarawak, but we work together in support of the government's drive to develop the state. And that was what distinguished us from the Peninsular Malaysia. We had not much issues on problems related to religion. You know, in fact, we can pride ourselves that you know, all religious groups, you know, respect each other.
Okay, so you mentioned a bit earlier, just to kind of follow up on that, you mentioned a bit earlier that, you know, maybe Sarawak is a model for racial peace and harmony, as you said it. Yeah. What is it that Malaya can learn from Sarawak when it comes, if it were to model what Sarawak is doing right, what is it that Malaya can learn?
I would say, number one, respect and understand each other's religion. Them, and not to be over zealous in promoting one's religion to the extent that some other religious group feels that their freedom of religion is being threatened or undermined. The Constitution guarantees religious freedom, even though Islam is the official religion. And the Constitution clearly states that, you know, there is space for various religious groups to propagate their own religion, so long as they do not transgress on the official religion, and they are entitled to have their own religious institution. So if we stick to that and stop politicizing religion, and some people have been telling me that they're a bit concerned about political Islam being the, you know, being promoted too aggressively. So take all these sort of issues out from religion and let all religious organizations look after their own people in the way that they thought best, in the way that they believe is the pathway to heaven, you know, or to life eternity. And I think that should be the way. You see, there are many issues with regard to where, you know, in Peninsula, you know, where non-religious places of worship should be sited. That actually is something that does not bother us. If you go to Miri, you'll find there's a church and a mosque next to each other, and a Muslim and a Christian cemetery next to each other. That hasn't been an issue, you know? So in that respect, it is something that we are quite proud of, because nobody comes along and say, look, you should not do this, you should not do that, you know, if you want to pursue your religious practices. We just let everybody, you know, without insulting each other, without annoying each other, you know, just go ahead.
If I could ask you about development, though, you know, in all these decades, so it's an extraordinarily rich territories, the land is providing so much, and yet out-migration for young people is a huge issue. Finding employment in the territory is a major concern, and at wage levels that match the peninsula. Is that where the dynamics are now? This failure to develop the economy to an extent that meets the aspirations of at least the younger generation?
Well, in order to retain the younger generation in the state, there must be opportunities for them. We started off on Malaysia Day as a very backward state. there isn't much industry. The mainstay of the economy then was agriculture. Whereas in the 70s and the 80s, the peninsula went on a drive on industrialization. You know, in Penang, in Nilai, Johor, and all that, which we don't have here. And at the same time, we haven't got the resources to went on to develop our own industry fast enough, because by and large it revolves two things. One is how to attract investment into Sarawak. When foreign investors come, they look first to the peninsula before they even think about Sarawak. So things begin to change when Pahin Sri Taib Mahmud was the chief minister. He sought advice from, among others, the late Tun Dr. Lim Chong Yu, and he said we must leapfrog and go into the high-tech sector. So we started the Samajaya free trade, free industrial zone. And we bring in multinationals to locate there. And the second phase, it is still ongoing. You know, we have multinationals there making all sorts of things, computer chips and the like. And then the next phase was to develop our hydroelectric potential.
Right, Dr. Sri, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to have to go for a quick break. But let's come back and continue this conversation. We'll be right back with more with Dr. Sri J.C. Fong. Stay tuned to Consider This. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutin. We're joining you from Sarawak. We are at Riverside, a majestic hotel in Kuching. And our guest today is Sarawak Legal Counsel, Dato' Sri J.C. Fong. I want to discuss honouring the Malaysia Agreement 1963 and perhaps your perspective as legal counsel, where you see some of the legal and constitutional barriers or encumbrances to fulfilling Sarawak's contemporary aspirations.
The Malaysia Agreement 1963 has been described by one of the signatories, Harry Macmillan, then Prime Minister of UK, as the birth certificate of Malaysia. That document gave birth to this federation. It's a document that was agreed by all the relevant parties, the UK government, the Malayan government, the government of then Singapore state, and the government of Sabah, North Borneo and Sarawak, or the representatives of the people of Sabah, North Borneo and Sarawak. That agreement sets up the framework for the federation to operate so that the rights of the federal government and the rights of the Borneo states are properly set up, and in regard to the special protection for and safeguards for the interests of Sabah and Sarawak, they were to be largely enshrined in the constitution. And if there are any matters which are not embedded in the constitution, which has been amended by the Malaysia Act, then they will be dealt with by administrative, executive, and other action by the government of the federation, of the new federation, and the government of the states of Sabah and Sarawak. Of course, that document really is regarded as a treaty and serves to define the role of the federal government and as well as the autonomy and legislative authority and so on of Sabah and Sarawak. But of course, as the years go by, due to changes in government, and if I may say so, due to changes in administrators, some of those provisions were not faithfully adhered to. Maybe as a result of political, administrative, or other expediency. And of course, that has given rise to a certain degree of dissatisfaction.
Can I ask you though, is the dissatisfaction, it's reached, I could say, almost fevered pitch at this point in time. It wasn't so perhaps 10 years ago, but the demand for honoring the MA63 agreement seems now to be front and center of politics. And we're in, you know, in, as it were, in the political season now. I wonder if you can help us understand how clear or unclear some of the terms are. How much of the these agreements were codified, how much are gentlemen agreements, it's something that we've done by convention rather than you know, legislated. And what exactly is the next step in this conversation, you as a legal counsel for the Sarawak state, what is it that you'd like to see where would you like to see this conversation go?
First, all or whatever was necessary to safeguard the interests of Sabah and Sarawak once they become members of the federation are largely set out in the constitution. The additional sources of revenue, the additional legislative powers which are not available to the peninsular state, and the freedom or autonomy given to Sabah and Sarawak with regard to certain matters, especially how we deal with our natural resources, were quite clear. There cannot be any doubt about, you know, what is in the Malaysia agreement, which subsequently were embedded into the constitution. But what happens is, during the course of time, because of various reasons, partly economic, like the need for the petroleum resources, the wealth from important resources like petroleum should be shared, right? Otherwise, in the words of somebody, you know, there will be, you know, states which are poor and some states which become very rich, and that would not be conducive to keeping the federation together. And, you know, the issues like the special grant that were given to the states as part of the deal. They were supposed to be reviewed to take into account the cost of providing services, you know, and inflation and growth of population and so on. Those had not been reviewed since 1976. So with the result, you know, there had been some noises made from even from among government circles. So when the...
Would you say that it's true that the resentment, there was resentment growing over the fact that the true spirit of MA63 had not been honoured over, as you said, the decades and time and different administrators?
Well, it is, I wouldn't say it's not fully honoured. You know, in fact, some parts of it were rigorously complied with. It is only on certain economic financial issues that cause a lot of this problem. And of course, when the late Chief Minister Adinan Satem came along, he understood all this issue, and he took steps to address them. I remember he came to have breakfast with the then Prime Minister Dato Sri Najib and came back and told me that he has got an understanding from the Prime Minister to look into these issues. Because if the issues are not resolved, then there would be you know, some wider ramification. And of course, there was an understanding that these issues be resolved by a high-level committee, which the federal cabinet formed during Dato Sri Najib's time. But the negotiations maybe took quite some time.
Are we seeing progress, do you think, on
this
front?
There is progress. I couldn't say there's no progress. You know, some of the administrative matters had been given to us, you know. But of course, there are other issues that arose from implementation and performance of the MS63 issues.
Right, I do, because we're running out of time. I was very interested to know, you clearly circumscribed the question of MA63 and autonomy in terms of financial economic issues. But it seems that in the politics of today, there are concerns about identity, there are concerns about language use, there are concerns about the core values that Sarawak have as opposed to the peninsula or even the federation as a whole. How do you think that plays out? What would you say to those people who say Sarawak needs to remove itself from the federation, or, you know, those separatist sentiments, or those sentiments that say that somehow the federation is not working for Sarawak? Would you share those sentiments? Are you critical of them? Where do you stand on those matters?
My personal view. Well, number one, the federation is there. We are a member of the federation. There is nothing in the constitution to say that we can withdraw. So whatever shortcoming, we got to deal with it. Right. But we must not take the wrong option that some people have been articulating, that is to leave. Because to leave doesn't mean that things will get better. It may be worse. So So people got to examine this very carefully, you know.
I'm sorry, we've run out of time, but I'm just going to let you finish your thoughts if you want to wrap up what you were thinking about.
Wrap up my thought?
Yes.
No, I say this, you know. If you leave, if Sarawak leave, can Sarawak survive? Economically, you can say we have the resources, but how much of it is left? The oil, they say by 2040, everything will be finished. And even if they're available, you know, they're in deep waters, you may not even be able to explore and, you know,
right,
produce those. The forests, even if there are still forests left, in the present global environment, can you still chop down the forests? Especially after the COP26 Glasgow summit.
Dato' Sri, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Dato' Sri J.C. Fung, Sarawak Legal Counsel there, joining us on Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
We will be back same time tomorrow. Thank you so much for watching, and good night. We'll be right back.